Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen, and today we're diving into the world of digital inclusion in the telecommunications industry. We're being joined by Dr. Karen Smit, who has recently published her thesis and received her doctorate on that subject. Karen, good morning. Welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Good morning, Lois, and thank you so much for inviting me to participate in one of your podcasts.
Well, it's a subject that I think is really fascinating, and it's something that we're becoming increasingly dependent on our digital devices. So the subject of digital inclusion is something that touches all of us to a greater or lesser degree. So I'm fascinated to learn more about your findings, your thesis, and some of the work that you've done in that area. But before we go there, can we just take a step back and ask you to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yes, certainly. So I'm Karen Smit. I live in Cape Town, and I work at a telecommunications company. I've been working at that company for many, many years, something like 24 years. And yes, so would you also like me to tell you about myself, Lois, at this point?
I think that would be great if you can just give us an overview of who you are and...
Okay. So I live in Cape Town. I've been married for 27 years. I've got one child. And in general, I just like to be an advocate for people with disabilities to obviously to increase their participation in society. And that passion comes from myself being a person with a physical disability. So I have had, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis at the age of 3 or 4 years old. And that was in the 60s. So they did not really know a lot about the condition, and they experimented a lot. I really spent most of my primary school years, in hospital. And we lived in a small town, so my mom always had to, you know, go up and down with me to Cape Town to see the specialist. So, but I went to school. I went to the school in the town, and the children would help me and carry me and so on. So yes, you know, growing up then with this disability, in a single parent family scenario. So, it was just my brother and myself. And then at the age of almost 30, I moved to Cape Town. And I feel that was, you know, where things really started happening for me, when I started to, you know, learn to drive my own car. I got a good job when I moved to the city. So also my rheumatoid arthritis has, it's been in remission. So I don't have pain, but obviously it has done a lot of damage to all my joints. So I'm quite severely, mobility impaired. I walk with crutches permanently. But despite that, I live an active life. I absolutely live a full life. And I must say my, support system. My husband has just been so amazing in always supporting me and assisting me with, you know, various things, whether it's putting on my shoes or whatever, cooking food and keeping the house clean. He's really been a great support, you know, in my life.
I think having a good support system it makes such a difference. And for myself as well, being visually impaired, you know, it makes my life just a little bit easier. Yeah. Now, you've been very involved in advocacy work, particularly advocating for women and girls with disabilities. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the work you've done in that area?
Yes, certainly. So in 2014, I started WANT. Now, WANT means Women's Achievement Network for Disability. And I then went into partnership with Marlene LaRue from Artscape. And I said to her, we got together. I've noticed there's a big gap when it comes to girls with disabilities. They are absolutely invisible. I have just done research on them myself, just, you know, reading up by myself. And it was shocking what I found is that girls with disabilities are completely overlooked. And we discussed this and I said to her, what can we do? You know, we are women with disabilities, but at when we were young, also Marlene at the age of 3 or 4, both of us got disabled from that age. So, you know, we also were once girls with disabilities, teenagers with disabilities, young women with disabilities. Can we give back? Let's give back to these girls because we know the barriers that we had to face growing up with a physical disability. We understand, we experience firsthand that society really didn't, you know, give us a chance, or they did not think that we would achieve something in life one day. Sorry. And that's the big thing with a physical disability, is that people can look at you and within a split second, they can make a judgment over your life. And I know that those girls had these same challenges. So I started speaking to different special schools, to the teaching staff, just to check and to find out more, you know, what is their experiences? Does it balance with what research is saying? And it was so much more when I started talking to the teachers to hear about the challenges of these girls with disabilities, because at school, they are just being taught about school lessons. They are just, the aim is just to get them through the school system. But there's nothing really more about motivating them or people really coming to them and saying, you know what, you can become anything you want to, or you can become successful one day, whatever success means to that person. It doesn't mean everybody's going to be a doctor and have 3 degrees and stuff like that. But what is successful for that person? And so we started these annual events for girls with disabilities from special schools. We did it in over 5 years, from 2014 to 2019. So just pre-COVID, we also then stopped. We couldn't continue. So these girls from special schools, they were teenage girls, ages 13 to 19, together with the teachers would attend the event. But the event wasn't just an event whereby they came and they were observers. No, we did not pitch it like that. It was an event where we wanted them to feel and experience something in their soul. So not just listen to speakers or, you know, we wanted them to really, really see Marlene and myself. You know, I'm on crutches. Marlene has also got, you know, her disability. We facilitated the sessions, see ourselves struggling to walk in the venue, but we did that. And then sharing our journeys and also inviting other women with disabilities to come and share their stories, especially younger women with disabilities. And we would have them dance. We would have them. I think the great part was asking them to share and asking them the question, what would you like, or what is your dream for yourself one day? And having those girls verbalize what their dreams are, what they would like to become. Because though that's not things that they get asked in general. And we said to them, we once were girls just like you. And we said to them, we stood there and we said to them, we might be successful today, but we also had the same challenges you experienced. And then obviously we gave them tools and we made it clear that even if you have a disability, it's still your responsibility to take action, to plan your future. So yes, it's great. You must dream. You must have a plan for your future. But how does that happen? It's not going to fall out of the sky into your lap. So we gave them the tools about planning and making them realize that people aren't good. That's just not going to happen. They need to work hard and use their networks. There's lots of resources today available for people with disabilities, which wasn't there when we grew up. For examples, internships, learnerships. There's so many organizations giving bursaries. There's just a lot of resources that if you want to do something, you can use those resources. And I think the other thing that we also said to them was, and this I think is a great benefit, Lois, for people with disabilities in general, which links to your topic of this discussion, is today you've got technology. So, if you find it's difficult for you to attend, let's say, courses physically, going there, because we know transport for people with disabilities is non-existent. So there's so many barriers that we as people with disabilities need to overcome. And that's where technology comes in, because if you can't go to a college or any venue to attend a course, there's online courses and lots of them are even free. So there's so many opportunities and resources available that you can go and that's at your disposal just to enrich yourself, and you can plow that back in your community. So it was important for us to make them realize that they have got something to also give back to their communities and to their society, despite having their disability. Because if we could do it, also coming from difficult backgrounds, broken families, if we could do it, then we wanted them to understand and we wanted to motivate and encourage them and say, you know what, you also have that chance to enrich yourself and to grow and to develop yourself and to become part of society in whatever small or big way. But your life can have a purpose. And I must say, Lois, it was the feedback from the teachers and the girls coming to Artscape, which is such a beautiful venue. They've never been there, most of them. You know, we really, treated them like queens for the morning. And then they were never treated like that. And we would give them nice things to take with. And, they left there, motivated and inspired. And I think a lot of them told us that they really felt, encouraged and that they have got a chance, you know, to have also a future. And one of the girls that actually attended, that we know of those sessions today is a successful singer. And she said her dream in one of our sessions was, I want to become a South African singer. And today she's a singer. And she verbalized her dream for the first time in one of our sessions. That was hugely a successful initiative, and maybe we'll pick it up in future again.
So Karen, that was phenomenal work, and I really hope that you do manage to find the time and the capacity to start that program again. Because I think, you know, one of the main reasons that I started this podcast is to allow persons with disabilities and persons without disabilities to see the world through our eyes, through our experiences, and realize that there are differences, there are options, there are possibilities. And I think the sharing of that message is so important. So I commend you and Marlene for that work. And I will wait to see in the future to see if the two of you do manage to pick up the project again.
Yes, thanks.
But I want to turn more now to telecommunications and digital inclusion. You yourself said that you work in the telecommunications industry. Can you tell us a little bit about your work and the work that you're doing?
Yes, most certainly. So I head up the accessibility department within one of the telecommunications companies within South Africa, and I've been working in this company for 24 years. I really, really started at the bottom when I joined the company, and that I started working as a call center agent in customer care. And that was after being retrenched from my previous job as a social worker. So I went from being a social worker also with people with disabilities to being a call center agent. At that stage, I had my own recruitment company, and although I had a degree as a person with a disability, it was still difficult to get a job. And then one of the companies that I was providing disabled people to, the CVs of them, you know, I just decided that me also start applying, because I got married at that time and I just had to get an income. And yes, so then I also threw my CV in, and after lots of assessments and test, and you know, I made it, and then that's how I landed up in the telecommunications industry. And I must say, from the moment that I started doing the working with customers over the phone, that was in 1997. So mobile was still very new in South Africa. It was just 3 years old. And I absolutely fell in love with the type of work, with technology, when I also started experiencing using a mobile device myself, how convenient it was. Mm. And then from customer care, I did not work long there. I worked in that area for 8 months. And then I started applying for other management positions. And I then went into management positions in various groups of the company. So I've worked in billing systems, which was quite technical. I led a team of technical agents, monitoring systems. I then also at one stage worked in human resources, and that was when the CEO asked me to start a division. Those years we would call it employment equity. Nowadays it's referred to as diversity and inclusion. So I started two offices, the D&I office, as well as the product office. So in other words, focusing on colleagues and then focusing on consumers. And what I love about this company that I work for is the nature of its culture, in that it was since the beginning that the company started in 1994, the culture was inclusive because they started employing people with disabilities in the call centers from day one. From day one that operations opened up, they started employing people with disabilities. So those two divisions I relocated to head office in Midrand, where I then worked for 3 years to start those divisions. And then when it got so big, I then just specialized in the product division. So today I head up that division where I mainly focus on ensuring that our products and our services are accessible for people with disabilities. An example, how does deaf people contact our organization? Because mostly you get numbers to call, but deaf people can't call. So what alternative processes do we put in place? And then it's also about educating our consumers with disabilities about accessibility. As an example, the accessible devices like smartphones, Apple and Android devices. We also partner with some organizations. For example, Cape Town Society for the Blind, we opened a smart digital center. So we provide them with devices and they would then train visually impaired people or blind people on how to use a touchscreen phone. Because for some blind people, it's daunting to start using a touchscreen phone, and they then get students in and they take them through a 6-month course as an example. And we even find that senior people deep in their 60s, they do this course and they love it. And they say, you know what, I never knew that all these apps exist and this is how I can download. We also, in the program, we also build in items like how can you save data, all of those tips and tricks to also make sure that people understand all of those different elements of a smart device. And then, Lois, my other big passion is I participate a lot in local and global ICT conferences, because that's a platform where I can share my experience of the ICT world for people with disabilities, and then encourage those attendees and even other speakers to pursue the digital inclusion of people with disabilities. So the ICT industry, and not even just the ICT industry, but I think any industry, whether it's retail, it doesn't matter which industry it is, for people to realize that people with disabilities don't live on an island. They are part and parcel of society, and that disability is part of humanity. And so it's really something that organizations should by default think when they do their strategy planning for the year. Their focus areas is to make sure that they intentionally include people with disabilities in their strategies. So I do, I speak at a lot of conferences. And that for me is one of my main purposes, is also to advocate for inclusion on all levels for people with disabilities.
I want to talk a little bit about your doctorate, about what it was that you were investigating and how you went about researching and planning your thesis.
So I absolutely loved my topic. The topic was something that I know very well, in the sense that it relates to the work that I do. But the fact that I did this research gave me more and deeper knowledge of inclusion. So it was great doing the research because I discovered gems and I discovered aspects of the ICT industry that, you know, that I was not aware of. So I investigated how the processes of technical companies can promote or hinder the digital inclusion of persons with disabilities. So I was very interested to see what are the processes that can promote the inclusion of people with disabilities. So when you are part of an organization or a company, what should you be aware of in terms of including people with disabilities as part of your consumer base? So in my study, I conducted a case study of a mobile network operator in South Africa, and I interviewed senior management members. And from the consumer side, I interviewed visually impaired persons. So I focused on visually impaired persons in my study. But what is great about the study is that it relates to any disability. So although my participants were visually impaired people, the findings, yes, relates to any disability. And it was, I really enjoyed, you know, getting the feedback from those consumers in terms of how do they experience accessibility, or how do they experience doing business with companies in our country. What were the barriers they experienced, and then also what do they feel are solutions? What would they like companies to do so that they have a barrier-free engagement with that company?
Sorry, carry on.
So in a nutshell, I'm just going to end off by saying that the study showed that inclusive culture and inclusive design are the most important factors that companies can consider when wanting to include disabled consumers.
I think it's so true because, it doesn't matter who I speak to. I keep hearing the message that building something with accessibility in mind is a lot more cost effective than trying to re-engineer and reverse engineer something to become accessible.
Yes.
What did you identify as being the main problems within the telecommunications field, with the main barriers that your participants found?
I've discovered that one of the main barriers were keeping inclusive design up front. That's actually just what you mentioned now. Because that type of environment is extremely competitive and it's very fast paced. So even if some companies realize that they need to do it, then it didn't always happen. So keeping inclusive design up front, just when you map out customers' journeys, everything you do, the marketing process, keep inclusive design up front, get users involved, also to come and do user testing and so on. So that was definitely one of the challenges, was to do that. And then I think the second one is, even in Africa, not just in South Africa, but in the rest of Africa, is also affordability. So we know that people with disabilities are like 90% plus unemployed. Some that are employed, they don't earn much. So that affordability is a great barrier in terms of getting connectivity, getting access to devices, yeah, so I would definitely say those are the two main barriers. The positive point about affordability, though, is that prices, and I'm talking about South Africa, has been coming down in terms of, you know, data and, yeah, just certain usages and then also certain devices. But still, I think it's something the way, you know, that companies are working on, and they do realize that affordability is a barrier, not just even for people with disabilities. I'm just thinking for people in general, on the African continent, and they, it's positive to see that there's, you know, the action being taken to address that.
I think you're right there, because obviously with poverty being such a huge problem within our continent, and I'm not saying that, you know, I don't perpetuate the stereotype that all of Africa is poverty stricken, but we do have a sector of our society that does struggle with income and generating income, with unemployment, and a lot of other associated challenges. So the cost side is a big barrier. Mm. And I think as well, you know, what you're saying there is almost, that's the good side of the telecommunications industry being so competitive. Yeah. Yes, it's fast-paced and things change drastically with you know, constant updates and changes. Mm. But the positive side of it being so competitive is that it does impact on the cost. Yes. And it does keep the costs and bring the costs down.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
That's quite interesting. And then from there, let's turn the tables over and say, what do you think the opportunities are if there is increased digital inclusion?
Well, I think for ICT companies, it will be great, because if digital inclusion is promoted, then more people will be connected. More people will become online. And that is what most ITC companies are striving for, because they are also complying with the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. So, and that's really a big one, is to get the masses connected. And other opportunities, obviously, for people with disabilities, it's huge. I mean, it's actually endless, because if you aren't connected, you are really going to stay behind. And that's not what these companies want. So when people with disabilities get connected, they then have opportunities to access, for example, employment. So nowadays, you know, everything is digital, recruitment companies. You can get all of that information online. I know a lot of people go on social media. They can earn money that way, or they can look for employment or promote themselves on social media. So it's just endless. But employment for me is a big one. And I think now what makes me excited about the fact that we had COVID, of course, COVID was quite devastating. But I think the positive thing from COVID was that it showed to the corporate, and not just the corporate, but I think both the public and the private sector, that people with disabilities can work from home. And that for me is a big positive takeaway from the COVID. And that all happens with connectivity and employment. So suddenly I say to employers, but immediately you have access to a bigger pool of people with disabilities. They've been advocating for decades to work from home, and it was never granted. And now that has been proven all over the world, that working from home is an option, and lots of companies follow that hybrid model now, where you know, you can work either from the office or home. So I'm very excited about that. And technology is big enabler in that scenario. So that people with disabilities or students can, you know, work a few hours in a call center as an example, but they can access employment or promote their own businesses online. The other one that makes me very excited for people with disabilities, they can access education when they are connected. They can, if they can do courses online, a lot of it is free. They can study at universities online if they don't want to physically perhaps attend a educational institution. And then, of course, also something like access to information and just being connected to other people. So there's so much value and opportunities, and ultimately having access to digital inclusion. Just to summarize all of this up is to say that it enables people with disabilities to participate in society.
You know, I think it's so true. And we also do need to acknowledge, though, that the digital inclusion within the telecommunications side is only one piece of the whole process. Mm. And, you know, there needs to be equally work done by organizations, by companies, by corporates, by recruitment agencies to make their side of things inclusive as well. Mm. But it has to start, and hopefully with it becoming more of a focus of the telecommunications field, it will also spread from there to other industries. So it's exciting. And I think you're absolutely right that just the connectivity, that side of things, does open a huge number of new opportunities. Mm. I was listening very intently as you were talking about possibilities of employment that have arisen as a result of the COVID pandemic. And I think that's going to be a really interesting space to watch in the next few years, to see how that actually plays out in terms of working environments and hybrid working models and things like that. Mm. Because it does, in terms of employment, it totally disproves the belief that working from home, working remotely is not possible, which has always been a huge barrier that we've faced as persons with disabilities. So very exciting times ahead, I think. Corin, if people would like to reach out to you to find out more about your work and about the work you're doing in terms of inclusion and in the telecommunications field, how can they contact you?
Lois, they can just send an email to me. I'll give the email address now. It's Karen, so it's Karen Smith, Smit, and then the number 50. So it's karensmith50@gmail.com. And that would be the best way to contact me.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for that. Karen, as one final question, what advice would you give to telecommunications companies who are looking at whether their systems, their processes are inclusive? What advice would you give to them? Where should they start?
Well, I would say to them, if people with disabilities are part and parcel of the diversity and inclusion agenda. So if they don't include disability within the diversity and inclusion strategies, then they can't say that they are an inclusive company. So for them to realize that people with disabilities that they should consider including them, and that disability is part of humanity. It's something that can happen to any person. Nobody is exempted from becoming disabled. And yes, we human, and our bodies, things happen to our bodies and our minds. It can happen to anybody. So it's just for me to, for my main advice would be to create that view of inclusive thinking, not just woman or race, gender or race. Yes, that's of course very important, and LGBT plus as well, but disability is part of that. And these elements don't have to compete with each other, because I find often disability is last on the list when it comes to D&I strategies. No, don't let these elements compete. They can run parallel, because there's also intersectionalities. You can get a Black woman that's gay with a disability. So for me, it's just about being aware that disability is part and parcel of your strategy.
Thank you for that. I think that's very true advice. Karen, thank you so much for talking to us today. I've really enjoyed learning a bit more about the work that you're doing and some of the studies that you've done. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Big pleasure. Thanks, Lois.
I want to apologize for the dog barking in the first half of the episode. Unfortunately, it is one of the realities of living with dogs, but hopefully it wasn't too invasive. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of A Different Way of Seeing. It would really help us if you could rate and review the show on iTunes. It helps other people to learn about the show and spread the word about what we're doing. Thank you so much, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you, so find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazzie. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us, and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.